This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
I have with me the Navy Captain, Mark Steiner. He is a chaplain of the Joint Staff at the Pentagon, and he does some interesting work in terms of providing spiritual guidance to our senior leaders as well as our military servicemen and women around our nation. Chaplain, thank you for joining me on Fed Access.
Derek, thank you so much for the invitation to be with you today.
You know, before I get started, we got to just thank Linda Strading. She introduced me to you, and she came on the show a while back and had that interesting tour of the National Cathedral that we had on Fed Access, and really provided some interesting insight on the military aspects of the National Cathedral, which kind of puts us right here with you in your job as a chaplain of the Joint Staff. I mean, what do you do every single day? I mean, are you advising? Are you, you know, putting out prayers to the senior leaders? What's happening?
Derek, thank you for the question. As the chaplain of the Joint Staff, my office, which is referred to as the Office of Religious Affairs, focuses on the three priorities of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is Admiral Mullen. And his priority number one is to defend our vital national interests in the broader Middle East and South Central Asia. Now, for that priority, my Office of Religious Affairs supports this priority by working with the other branches of service to make sure that our men and women that are in harm's way have access to religious ministry support. The chairman's second priority is health of the force. And the Office of Religious Affairs supports that priority by focusing on wounded warrior concerns, suicide prevention, sexual assault prevention, marriage and family enrichment. And then the chairman's third priority, which is properly balanced global strategic risk. Now, our office supports that by working with the chaplains that are assigned to regional and functional commands as they provide religious ministry support in their area of responsibility.
Wow, that's a lot to chew on right there.
It is.
And I want to kind of cover that because you mentioned a lot of critical things that's going on about, and two things that's really important to me, the wounded warrior. We're hearing about these suicides, you know, within the military, and maybe talking about that on your day to day, you know, and before we kind of get into that, on your day to day work, you know, as you're kind of doing all of these things and has this oversight of the Office of Religious Affairs, what does that entail? You know, I mean, we hear the description, but are you on the phone with other chaplains, you know, across the world? Or are you, you know, getting feedback on certain kind of spiritual dynamics? What happens?
Yes, Derek, we're in constant communication with other chaplains. And by the way, we dare not forget the personnel that support the chaplains, who are chaplains' assistants and religious program specialists. They provide valuable feedback to us regarding health of the force issues, and on a daily basis, those chaplains' assistants, and religious program specialists are taking a pulse of the men and women in their area of responsibility, and they in turn feed that back to us so that we're in a position to properly advise the chairman and the Joint Chiefs of Staff regarding health of the force issues.
Right. When you guys are taking the assessment, I mean, how does the chaplain go about doing that? You know, I mean, you know, we have psychologists, we have counselors. In terms of the chaplain, you know, I mean, is the chaplain out there with the force, you know, talking to, sitting down with individuals, maybe looking to see if somebody's stressed out? What happens?
Yes, permit me for a moment to go back to my very first tour as a Navy chaplain when I was a destroyer squadron chaplain. Back then, chaplains referred to that type of ministry as deck plate presence.
Okay.
So in other words, the chaplain would go from stem to stern, from bridge to bilge, if you were, on that ship, getting around, looking at the service members in the face to see how they were doing, mm-hmm. and asking them how they were doing. And not just a superficial kind of greeting, but making sure that they dug a little bit deeper to make sure that things were all right back home in their marriage and with their family, with their finances and other things that were going on in the life of that service member. And so the typical chaplain, the typical chaplain's assistant and religious program specialist is always out there getting a pulse of the troops, the morale, and their spiritual well-being. That's a critical function that the chaplains, chaplains' assistants, and religious program specialists provide.
You know, I know that, you know, and we were talking about this and joking about this. I'm former Marine. I know you served some time, about 8 years
indeed.
With the Marines. You know, what was your experience? I mean, you know, we are Marines. We can kind of be a little bit more hardcore sometimes, and we'll shut our mouths when we see a chaplain come around. But, you know, what was your experience, you know, on with kind of more of a combatant unit, you know, off a ship, you know, in terms of dealing with the spiritual life?
One of my favorite tours with the Marines was when I was assigned to the 11th Marines Expeditionary Unit, Special Operations Capable, and had the honor of deploying with them to Jordan and Kuwait, and therefore was flown to these different locations where they were assigned, where they were covering. And that gave me an opportunity to get around and see how they were doing, to eat with them, talk with them, work with them in their environment. And when you do that, you build up trust and credibility. And that's very, very important when you're dealing with service members. Chaplains, as you're aware, since you're a prior Marine, they have privileged communication.
Right. Right.
And that's covered by Uniform Code of Military Justice, Military Rule Evidence 503, in fact. And so you have privileged communication with chaplain and that individual. And therefore, that service member can bear his or her heart in a protective, safe environment.
That's right. How far can a chaplain go in terms of, you know, when you see a service member in distress, or, you know, you kind of see, and all of us who have been deployed, you know, being away from family, being away from loved ones, financial situations, and everything else, like you mentioned, can really take a toll on you. How far can you go? Can you intervene and then take this person to the Red Cross, or take this person to the psychologist? Or, I mean, where can a chaplain really be instrumental with this?
Derek, the training that our chaplains undergo, particularly at the what we refer to as the basic course, which is now at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, chaplains are trained in the full range of resources that are available to service members. Therefore, if you have a service member that has a particular issue, and for the moment, let's say that it's a financial
sure.
issue, that he or she has financial stress,
yes. mm-hmm.
and they present that to the chaplain. Well, the chaplain will listen to them, of course, and then through the course of that conversation, the chaplain will encourage that service member to allow for a referral.
Okay.
So then the chaplain will try to work a referral to Navy and Marine Corps Relief such that that service member can go there, receive help, they can work on a budget so that it's not just a Band-Aid that they're putting on, but Navy and Marine Corps Relief would help them with a long-term budgetary plan to extricate them from the financial difficulties that they find themselves
right,
in.
Right. So really, I mean, when we look at it, you know, a chaplain is so much more. I mean, you guys are social workers. I mean, you guys are dealing with all the different dynamics of somebody, not just putting a prayer out. You really
right.
are kind of trying to, you know, refer people to the right services that can help them short term and long term.
Yes, indeed. And from my own frame of reference, I'm a pastor, ordained pastor from the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. My personal model for ministry comes from that beautiful verse in Matthew 4:23, where Jesus went about the countryside preaching, teaching, and healing. And so as I work with service members, I've employed that model. In other words, being out there with them having a preaching, teaching, healing presence with the men and women of the armed forces.
We'll take a quick break. We're having an interesting conversation about the chaplain of the Joint Staff, Captain Mark Steiner. He's a Navy captain, and he's in charge of the Office of Religious. Are you in charge of the Office of Religious Affairs? Is
yes,
that right?
Sir.
He's in charge of the Office of Religious Affairs at the Pentagon. He's a chaplain of the Joint Staff. We're talking about spirituality and chaplains within the military, how they work and what they do. When we come back on the break, I want to talk about you, Captain, about what got you into this. You know, what made you take and go from just maybe being a pastor and then join the military and decide to put yourself in harm's way as well. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Dawn Leaf, the senior executive for cloud computing at NIST on the Federal Executive Forum on Government Cloud Computing, sponsored by McAfee.
Those types of services and the boundaries on the improvements we can't envision. Just as historically there's a technology we think we will get certain benefits and then those benefits exceed what we envisioned, I think that will be the case here.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to keeping federal agencies ahead of the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, please call 1-888-VIRUS-NO or go to McAfee.com/government.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at BreakDownTheWalls.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, Dell, and Aview Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a very, very interesting conversation, and you need to go back to listen to segment one because we've been talking about a chaplain who's at the Joint Chief. His exact title is the chaplain of the Joint Staff at the Pentagon. He's in charge of the Office of Religious Affairs, and we're talking about spirituality and what chaplains do within the military. Have with me in the studio Captain Mark Steiner. He's a Navy captain in charge of this office, and we've been dealing with what's going on with religion in the military. Captain Steiner, you know, over the break we were talking about, you know, the growth of different denominations. Before I hit that, though, what inspired you in terms of kind of saying, you know what, I'm going to not necessarily just serve the public and I'm just going to be a pastor to the community. I'm going to go into the military and maybe put myself in harm's way with more operational units. I mean, that's a unique calling that's different than just going into the communities because you're, you know, you're putting yourself in combat situations sometimes. What inspired that?
Derek, when I was 14 and started studying for the ministry, I was fully intent about becoming a parish pastor. That was my dream. I felt like that was my calling. However, God works in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform, and I have a sister and a brother-in-law who served honorably and heroically in the Air Force. And they got me acquainted with their chaplains, and in fact, their daughter, my godchild, was baptized in an Air Force chapel. And that, I think, was pivotal in me becoming interested in military chaplaincy. Then, in terms of the actual Navy chaplaincy, when I was a pastor in Memphis, Tennessee, one of my elders was a retired sailor. And after the elders' meetings, we would get together, and he would share with me many, many, many sea stories.
Many
sea stories. He began to tell me that Navy chaplains don't just serve the Navy, but they also serve the Marine Corps and the Coast Guard.
And he wasn't the chaplain, but he had the impact.
That's right.
Of a chaplain that impacted him.
Right. That's right. And I was hooked. I mean, that's the short story. He told me the sea stories, and he told me about the different opportunities. And he told me about how critically important it is for our service members to have access to pastoral care.
From that point, I mean, in terms of somebody like yourself, I mean, you kind of came in, you were already doing, you know, you had already done your School of Divinity and everything else. You were already being a pastor. You know, what is the process? If somebody, you know, if there's somebody who's out there listening and they say, you know what, wow, this is, you know, I would love to maybe do this as well. Do you already need to be a pastor in order to join the military and then become a military chaplain? What is the process for somebody?
The process in general, Derek, is that a person would seek out their ecclesiastical endorsing authority.
Okay.
So, for example, whether it's a Catholic priest or a Jewish rabbi or a Lutheran, Methodist, Presbyterian, you would, whatever your faith group is, you search out the ecclesiastical endorsing authority for your faith group. Then that person will interview you, and then they will actually attest to your character, conduct, and competence on a Department of Defense form. And then that form will go to a respective branch of service, Army, Navy, or Air Force, for consideration. And then they will interview you. And then if they approve your package, then you will probably be assigned a spot in one of those basic courses.
Okay.
And then upon successful completion of that basic course, you will be a chaplain, and then you'll receive orders to your first duty station. But critical to all of this is that ecclesiastical endorsement from your faith-specific heritage.
So is there a, you know, specific kind of chaplain recruiter for every kind of ecclesiastic, either denomination or endorsement? I mean, do you go in and kind of find out who that person is off of the Navy website or something like that?
You can. I if I'm not mistaken, each branch of service does have a chaplain recruiter website.
Sure.
And that's packed full with information regarding the process. And it also provides, I think, some step-by-step details on how to contact your faith-specific endorsing agent, and also some of the requirements, because there are physical fitness requirements. And so I think you'll get a bowing acquaintance or a familiarity with some of the physical requirements that are associated with it.
You know, you mentioned the basic course, and a lot of kind of, I'm thinking about basic training and stuff like that. But for you guys, for chaplains, you know, what is the basic course? I know we kind of just talked about that you get a lot of the understanding of all the different services that the military provides in terms of helping someone.
Yes.
But is it also, I mean, do you get some exposure to the combat training? I mean, how far does that go in terms of really understanding the military culture?
You will be introduced to ministry in harm's way.
Okay.
And what that entails.
Is that a course, like ministry in harm's way?
Well, I don't think it's called that, but it is an introduction or an orientation to what could happen to you, because we do have to acknowledge that in this environment, you may very well have a chaplain that's in basic course one period of time, and then he or she is assigned to an operational unit, and they may be deployed.
That's right.
And that may be their very first tour. In fact, I had two deployments, my very first tour of duty.
with that in mind, you know, and this has always been an interesting kind of question that I've also heard. A chaplain in a combat scenario, if is a chaplain, can you not part of, you know, what you're taught? Is that can a chaplain not engage if a situation has become critical, or can a chaplain engage in combat if necessary? I mean, where does the line get drawn in terms of the moral of the chaplain and the role of the chaplain?
Derek, chaplains by definition are non-combatant.
Okay.
And therefore they do not bear arms, and the Geneva Convention protocols provide for that as well. It's very important for a chaplain to maintain that non-combatant status, and I would argue it's especially important when things become very critical and violent, if you will, in the fog and friction of war. Because if a chaplain were to shed blood, then how is a service member going to be able to approach that chaplain in the same way as they had done before?
Sure. And in a situation in terms of Geneva Convention, or if you are taken captive, that point of you kind of being the non-combatant may allow you to be the negotiator, may allow you to be that middle ground.
Yes.
That may save other lives.
Yes.
Yeah. With all that being the case, you know, in terms of the life of it, I mean, would you say that it's you know, you've experienced deployments, you've experienced a lot of different things. Is the life of a chaplain kind of for everybody? I mean, what would you say? What kind of person would say become a military chaplain?
Well, I would offer this. I think that in the military, for those of us that are in the military, have been in the military, people are familiar with the phrase military occupational specialty.
Right.
And I jokingly say to people that I'm colorblind, therefore that excluded me from the explosive ordnance disposal community.
Sure.
Therefore, all of us are called.
By default, you had to go to the chapel.
Right. No, not by default, but no, I understand. I believe all of us have a vocation.
Right.
And I believe that God calls different people to different things. For example, you were a Marine, but now this is your vocation.
Sure.
And so you take that very seriously, and it provides a great deal of satisfaction. And you're doing a service to many, many people that are in your listening audience. And likewise with a chaplain, when a chaplain is called, and in fact, the Navy Chaplain Corps seal has a phrase on it, which means called to serve.
Mm.
And therefore, we are called to serve. Now, if I were to say that in a policy context, chaplains are expected to support directly and indirectly the religious needs of all service members, their families, and authorized persons. Now, what does that mean exactly? The direct support means that I provide direct pastoral support to those that I have a common confession of faith with. For those that I don't have a common confession of faith with, I facilitate ministry appropriate to them. So, in other words, I try to locate materials for them, a place where they can worship, a time where they can worship, and perhaps a person that can lead their worship.
Okay. I want to take a quick break. When we come back, we got a couple of things I want to go into in terms of the growth of religion, in terms of the growth of different denominations within the military. You've been in the military a long time, so you've seen the kind of changes in terms of the spiritual dynamic within the military. And also, you talked about something really, really important about policy, about kind of the policy in terms of, you know, how do we implement spiritual services? How do we keep this balance between a combatant and then someone, you know, teaching religion and teaching the spiritual dynamic to soldiers or Marines or sailors or Coast Guardsmen or Air Force people and everything else? We're talking about the spiritual dynamics of the military, and we're talking about the Office of Religious Affairs. I have in the studio with me Captain Mark Steiner. He's a chaplain of the Joint Staff, and we've been having a really interesting conversation. We'll keep it going when we come back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you can't communicate effectively, you can't get the job done. That's why government agencies turn to Avaya Government Solutions and CenturyLink. Unified communication solutions from Avaya and CenturyLink increase employee productivity, improve customer service, and cut costs by integrating multiple forms of communications across multi-vendor networks. Faster, more efficient, at a lower cost. The future of unified communications has arrived. Learn more at avayagov.com/GSA2010.
The 16th annual BB&T Classic, presented by Boeing, benefiting the Children's Charities Foundation, returns to Verizon Center December 5th with a thrilling triple header of college basketball. The BB&T Classic, also brought to you by BMW of Fairfax, PF Chang's, and Masson, features Florida versus American, George Washington against Navy, and Maryland taking on preseason number 8 Temple. Tickets on sale now. For more information and to help make a difference with at-risk children, visit bbntclassic.com and on Facebook. The 16th annual BB&T Classic triple header, Sunday, December 5th at Verizon Center.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. A recent study comparing three treatment methods for asthma has found a possible alternate therapy for some. Dr. Gail Weinman at the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute points to a drug commonly used to treat chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
The study found that tiotropium was superior to doubling the dose of inhaled corticosteroids in controlling asthma.
Higher doses of corticosteroids do not improve symptoms for all asthma patients and can have significant side effects. Tiotropium has shown to help patients' day-to-day lung function, as well as the number of days in which they had no asthma symptoms. For details on this study, visit www.nhlbi.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a really, really good conversation about the spiritual side of the military. We're talking about chaplains. I have with me the chaplain of the Joint Staff, Captain Mark Steiner. He's a Navy captain. He's in charge of the Office of Religious Affairs at the Pentagon. Captain Steiner, we've been talking about kind of, you know, the different dynamics, having interesting conversations about, you know, your role as a chaplain, how you got into this and everything else. Over the years, since you've been in the military, we've seen a growth, you know, I mean, a lot of different new dynamics within spiritual components, new branches of religion coming up.
Yes.
What have you seen? You know, we were talking about an interesting fact, 203 ecclesiastic kind of either denominations or branches of religion?
Yes, 203 ecclesiastical endorsing authorities.
And what does that mean? What does that exactly
that,
mean?
That means that those ecclesiastical endorsing authorities are those groups that endorse chaplains to serve in the armed forces. And they attest to their character, their conduct, and their competence. And so in a very real sense, those endorsing authorities are saying that this chaplain is going to be a faithful ambassador for our faith group as they minister within the context of the military.
Does the military have someone to cover all 203?
There are many, many faith groups represented among men and women in the armed forces. In fact, religious life in America is marked by emergence, convergence, and divergence. Each week, new faith groups come into being. Sure. Each week, faith groups diverge because of maybe doctrinal difficulties or other things that come up. And each week, faith groups that have commonalities converge, and they have a common fellowship agreement or covenant. Therefore, religious life in America is very dynamic, and likewise with individuals. For example, a person may start out one faith group, may end up in another faith group. They may end up in no faith group. So it's very, very dynamic and fluid on an individual as well as on a collective level.
How does a religion or ecclesiastic, how do they get endorsed? I mean, what is the process of someone? Does someone bring it to you guys' attention and say, listen, this is a new group right here, and they have this many followers. We need to, you know, endorse this. I mean, what is the process of that?
A group would contact the Department of Defense, and then they would submit the necessary paperwork to be recognized as an ecclesiastical endorsing authority.
Okay. With that process, I mean, does somebody go out? I mean, if we walk through the process, does somebody go out and investigate that? Does someone, you know, you as a chaplain or one of your colleagues, is that a process of kind of seeing how valid this is? Or what does Department of Defense kind of take as, okay, now we will put this as part of this number?
Well, this is where we have to come back to the First Amendment, because on the one hand, you have the free exercise of religion, but then you also have the Establishment Clause. And therefore, it's a very delicate matter, this thing called the free exercise of religion in our country. And therefore, if you have a group that comes forward and if they have eligible candidates, then, and if they fill out the necessary paperwork to be recognized, then that would be the part of the process by which the Department of Defense would go about recognizing them as an ecclesiastical endorsing authority.
What are some of those 203? I mean, is Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism,
yes,
Islam?
Yes,
I mean, what do they fall under?
Well, for example, when I was the director of the Operational Ministry Center in San Diego, we had a Buddhist chaplain, we had an Orthodox rabbi, we had a Catholic priest, we had various branches of Christianity. It was a very representative
right.
organization.
Right.
And for me as the director, it was absolutely exhilarating working with chaplains from various faith groups and then working with them in such a way that we're providing the broadest possible religious ministry support to the men and women that were in those commands that we were serving.
You know, you just kind of brought up an interesting point, and I'm thinking in my mind that all these chaplains sitting around at the table from different denominations and different religious groups, your interaction, I mean, very rarely do people really get a chance to have an interfaith moment unless you're part of an interfaith organization. What's your experience with that, about various chaplains and various religions kind of working together?
Well, first, and in fact, this touches on the policy question that you raised earlier. Many of these chaplains have dietary provisions that they need to adhere to. For example, apparel, clothing provisions, also whether or not they receive immunizations.
Mm.
So depending upon the faith group, they may have special provisions that they need to adhere to. And so for the rest of the chaplains, it's important for us to be somewhat familiar so that we can support them in remaining faithful to their faith group.
So with that, you know, and you bring up an interesting point in terms of policy. If you have members who are a certain religion or they have to pray three times a day or whatever the dynamic is, part of DOD's commitment is that we will provide an outlet or provide services, or, you know, you don't have to do this if you're part of this religion. I mean, there are certain provisions within DOD regulations that allow for this.
Yes, and also within the operational context. And if you permit me for a moment to go back to when I was a destroyer squadron
sure.
chaplain, there would be times when I would have to adjust the timing of my service to accommodate the operational schedule of the ship. For example, when we had an underway replenishment, well, I would either adjust the service, and that was in conjunction with command support,
sure.
of course, but we would either have the worship service before the underway replenishment or after the underway replenishment. But the accommodation took place. And DOD has always supported the free exercise of religion. And in fact, I use the analogy of a golden thread. There's a beautiful golden thread of the free exercise of religion that runs from the First Amendment through Title 10 U.S. Code, through Department of Defense directives, and through service-specific policy. And it's important for chaplains to make sure that they work towards keeping that golden thread intact so that it doesn't get severed, that it doesn't get frayed.
Mm. Is that difficult?
Well, it's challenging. It's challenging. Yeah. And I think that if you were to ask any chaplain, they would respond that they love their work, they love what they're doing. And, of course, there are challenges along the way, and each day is a learning experience.
Sure, sure, sure. You know, in sitting with, because you deal with commanders of ships, you deal with now the joint Mullen, Admiral Mullen, and
yes.
everything else. How important is religion and how important is spirituality to senior command within the Pentagon, within the leadership, the civilian leadership of the military? I mean, do they really see that as an important component to make sure that the spiritual lives of soldiers and Marines and everyone else are taken care of?
Yes, indeed, Eric. And Derek, in fact, the policy states it in these terms, that the commanding officer is responsible for the morale and spiritual well-being of the troops. Therefore, the chaplains support that responsibility by working towards, again, the broadest possible religious ministry support to support those men and women in those respective units and commands.
Are there times where, as a chaplain, you may see the morale and you may make that recommendation to a commanding officer, say, listen, we need to maybe do this in order to kind of get, you know, I mean, we're seeing certain things. Is the commander kind of obligated to kind of listen to you? I mean, where does that line kind of get drawn at?
Well, there's always been a special relationship between chaplains and their commanders. And also between chaplains and the senior enlisted personnel of the unit. And in fact, the chaplain really takes a pulse of both the commander and the senior enlisted person, because that's how the chaplain finds out what the morale of the unit is, what the spiritual well-being of the unit is. And therefore, the chaplain's in a better position to advise the commander regarding religious observances, religious worship services and rites, and also how to best accommodate those unique situations that come up in the lives of service members.
The chaplain of the Joint Staff, Captain Mark Steiner, and talking about his office, the Office of Religious Affairs, and the role of chaplain in the military. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
A new supercomputer rating system has been released by an international team of scientists at the Department of Energy's Sandia National Lab. The rating system, called Graph 500, tests supercomputers for their skill in analyzing large graph-based structures that link the huge numbers of data points seen in biological, social, and security problems. Researchers hope to influence computer makers to build computers with the architecture needed to deal with increasingly complex problems. The current standard test of supercomputer speed is called LINPACK, but some researchers believe it doesn't measure performance well enough and that a new test is needed. Five areas for the new computational system could be cybersecurity, medical informatics, data enrichment, social networks, and symbolic networks.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Now that competitive analytics and business intelligence techniques are mainstream, to what extent can government use these techniques to enhance its own performance? Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour as he explores this issue and the uses of business analytics with Tom Davenport, co-author of Competing on Analytics, The New Science of Winning. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Here's Robert Kahn, Ph.D., from the panel discussion on Cyber 2020, the future of the Internet, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
And so when you have discussions like net neutrality, they were really not about the Internet, even though they were often claimed to be, because they weren't really challenging the protocols and procedures. They were really talking about policies that ought to apply to specific components of the Internet, like a communication service provider.
To hear the entire show, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Pressing challenges around issues like cybersecurity, net neutrality, and Internet governance have one thing in common. They all exist in cyberspace. Booz Allen Hamilton believes scenario development, strategic planning, and new governance models are key to promote and protect U.S. economic, social, and security interests in cyberspace, while ensuring the openness of the Internet and the privacy of individuals.
Booz Allen is ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
More than a dozen people suspected of planning a terrorist attack were arrested in Belgium, the Netherlands, and Germany this week. The suspects are accused of preparing an attack on behalf of an international Islamist group. The target of the attack was not known. The people arrested were Belgian, Dutch, Moroccan, and Russian nationals. A spokeswoman said the arrests were made during simultaneous raids on 10 apartments and that most of the suspects were arrested in the Belgian city of Antwerp. I'm J.J. Green.
Imagine coming in for a carrier landing at 150 miles an hour and having to hook your aircraft on a wire with a diameter the size of a silver dollar on a pitching, rolling, and heaving deck, and then coming to a dead stop in less than 3 seconds, often in the dark. Navy pilots encounter challenges like this every day, and Airink is there to help. Airink is leading the development of a fully automatic landing system that utilizes GPS and can be used anywhere in the world. Log on to airink.com. That's A-R-I-N-C.com to find out more about how Airink helps pilots and saves planes.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about spirituality in the military, talking about the role of the chaplain, talking about the chaplain of the Joint Staff. I have in the studio with me Captain Mark Steiner. He's a Navy captain. He serves as the director of the Office of Religious Affairs, and he serves as the chaplain of the Joint Staff. Captain Steiner, we've been talking about a lot of different things. I want to go inside the Pentagon. If we went inside and kind of took a tour, kind of a tour that people can kind of start visualizing certain things, what's the religious component of the Pentagon? How many chapels are there? When people go into these chapels, what do they represent?
Derek, there's a chapel which is located right next to the inner Pentagon Memorial. And that's a beautiful chapel. It has stained glass windows, and there are various faith groups that worship in that chapel on a daily basis. And it's a poignant reminder of God's presence with his people and of faith and spirituality. And again, the free exercise of religion. So it's there for people to use, and it's right next to that inner Pentagon Memorial.
Is it open 24 hours, 7 days a week? I mean, I know the Pentagon is always running. Is there, you know, can people access a chapel anytime?
I believe it is possible to go into it 24/7. Now, the chapel staff is very small, and they have a robust program that provides religious ministry support to multiple faith groups. It's a beautiful location for a number of reasons, because again, it's adjacent to where the crash was.
Right.
And it overlooks.
Is it a new chapel? Is it just newly built when things were redone?
That I'm not sure of the history on that, but it's a beautiful chapel, and it overlooks that field where you have the benches, the memorials that honor the lives of those lost in the terrorist attack.
Right.
And it's an opportunity for people to take time out from their busy schedule, because the Pentagon really is a city all its own, and it goes 24/7. And so it provides people an opportunity to call a screeching halt to their day and go have a quiet word of prayer or reflection or meditation.
Is that the only, is that the main chapel? Is there several other components or prayer rooms?
I believe that there is a second chapel. I haven't had an opportunity to visit that one yet. But as I understand it, there is a second chapel.
Outstanding. With that being the case, you know, 9/11, you know, kind of, you know, being there, I was with a Red Cross disaster team on 9/11, was down at the Pentagon about an hour then. And I remember the dynamic, and I remember seeing, you know, chaplains at work and everything else. Going back to that day, you know, what was your experience as being a chaplain, and how did that kind of impact you?
Many of us were on litter recovery teams in the immediate aftermath of the terrorist attack. And clearly it was a day of confusion. There were many service members and civilians that God bless them, they were there and they immediately turned to and were volunteering support and were prepared to go in harm's way to rescue victims. And I have the highest regard for the firemen because it was a terrible fire. And of course, the oxygen from all the corridors in the Pentagon were simply feeding that fire. And the firemen were absolutely heroic in the service that they provided that day. As we proceeded into the day and it became abundantly clear that there were going to be very few survivors, the chaplains turned to and developed a 24/7 watch detail. And so all of the chaplains in the National Capital Region at that time supported the victims and their families. And many of us were assigned to make casualty notification calls on the families. And I can't even begin to imagine what was going through the minds of the families as they waited.
Difficult days.
Yes, yes. But the chaplains' assistants and religious program specialists provided splendid support during the immediate aftermath. And then we set up a watch detail to provide support to the first responders. And because they were seeing things that were very unnerving and very difficult to see.
Very much so.
And so the chaplains were available to provide on-the-site counseling for the service members and the civilians that were the first responders in working rescue efforts.
Kind of moving forward, you know, several years after, what was the impact on you? I mean, did it rededicate your service to the military? Did it recommit to you, you know, that I need to be here?
Absolutely. I found out a few months later after the attack that one of my pastoral colleagues had a sister who was on that plane.
Hmm.
Apparently, she was a Virginia attorney, and she lost her life in that attack. In fact, there's a bench in the Pentagon Memorial Park in her memory. And I try to get out there on a regular basis to have a prayer for her family and her friends as they continue to mourn her loss. And very definitely, it was an opportunity for rededication in ministry.
Did at any point in time, I mean, out of anger, you know, and anything else, did it ever, you know, did you ever want to just change sides and say, look, I want to become more of a combatant, or you know, did it test your faith at any point in time?
I think it did. By the way, thank you for that question, because that is a profound question. It really is. And I think that there was a lot of soul searching that I did during those days. And I cannot even begin to tell you how many times I spent on my knees in prayer, praying for many things, praying for the victims, their families, praying for our service members who very definitely were going to be going into harm's way soon. But I think that for me, it became abundantly clear that I had to maintain my pastoral persona and my non-combatant status if I was going to be of any use to our men and women that were going into harm's way.
That's right.
Because they were going to need support.
Right, right. They needed someone to come to.
Yes.
They needed someone to come to.
Yes,
yes. You know, thinking about this in terms of a national security policy level, I mean, you know, you're a senior advisor to people who, you know, and as we know, the military is not just combating. I mean, most times the military is very much on peace missions, peacekeeping,
yes,
and
yes,
diplomacy. And we have, you know, major members of our military meeting with presidents of countries and everything else. How involved are you in terms of the national security policy or, you know, doing that diplomatic duty across the world? How involved are chaplains?
Derek, there are chaplains that are so-called combatant command chaplains. We have some that operate in regional commands and some that operate in functional commands. And they work very diligently in this regard, advising their commander and also serving in the capacity of religious leader liaison. And that supports humanitarian assistance efforts, disaster relief efforts, and also finding a common language with clerics of other cultures so that we can maybe work towards a common ground and a common understanding.
So you're out there on outreach. I mean, you're out there taking initiative of and maybe kind of giving the commander maybe, I'll just call it an intelligence briefing on maybe the religious and cultural components that they need to know of as we push forward into other countries sometimes.
Well, we would be very careful to say that it's not an intelligence briefing because, again, we're not combatants.
Sure.
But it is along the lines of supporting the mission of the command and also our national interests in that we work towards the amelioration of human suffering. And our goal is to support the commander's mission. And on behalf and at the behest of the commander, we would engage a religious cleric of a foreign country toward the end of working towards common ground and humanitarian assistance and disaster relief operations.
Thank you, Captain Mark Steiner, for coming on the show.
Thank you so
much. Any last words you want to say?
I appreciate the listenership, and also if I could make this one request to our listeners, if you can, go to a boot camp graduation because you will see pride and human spirit like you've never seen it before in our country.
Semper Fi on that one.
Hoorah.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED. Your source for federal news now.
40 kilometers northwest of Kandahar, Afghanistan, at a remote desert military base, American soldiers are playing video games. There are cold drinks, snacks, comfy chairs, and an internet connection. It's the USO To Go program, and it's just one of the ways the USO supports our troops, lifts their spirits, and serves as a link with the American people. Find out how you can help. Visit us at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
Good news for the uninsured and the insured. U.S. Healthy People 2020 Network is now offering annual health physical to the public. Members receive comprehensive health assessments for hypertension, thyroid, kidney, osteoporosis, diabetes, cholesterol, heart screening, and more till the year 2020. Find out your risks for heart attack or stroke. Take the extra step you and your family need to stay healthy till 2020 and beyond. Call 301-386-2223 or visit ushealthypeople2020.org for details. Sponsored by Prevent First, a nonprofit health organization.
Without an effective estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
The underlying battle is trying to lay out the framework for how we're going to deliver services over the internet without saturating the backbone, and do it in a way that you don't censor the internet, which is what net neutrality is getting at, but simply try to moderate bandwidth in a way which is fair.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey Eagles fans, tickets to all American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletics Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena.
Catch the Eagles' next home game Sunday, November 28th against Columbia at 2 p.m.
HalfPriceDC.com. Half Price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, spas, and more.
This week, buy Half Price gift certificates to Sport Rock Climbing Centers in Alexandria and Sterling. Challenge yourself to new heights at the Mid-Atlantic's premier rock climbing gyms.
And Tequila Grande of Vienna. Great tasting Mexican food that's fresh, flavorful, original, and pure. Chef Prakash guarantees that.
See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM.